Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is once again in session. Steve and I are reunited after a week off in the Cleveland studio. You always say, why do we have to tell where we are? Well, because sometimes we're not here, including last week when I was not in town at all. I was in Las Vegas, but we can get to that later. How are you?
Good. Better than Liz Cheney is doing these days. So just jumping right into it, it's a frustrating story to follow. I'm not a huge Liz Cheney fan, right?
I'm not either.
She's a staunch GOP old school Republican. But the one thing about her was, you know, she really wasn't putting up with Trump's, with Trumpism.
Trump taking over the party.
Right. And she's really pushed back against him, and especially this rhetoric that he and his followers are putting out about the election being stolen, and she won't support it. And so, the new Trump Republican GOPQ party is really pushing back against her. She's probably going to lose her spot in leadership. And what's funny is Breitbart put out an article saying that, you know, she's putting out this last ditch effort to save her spot. And I got to be honest, I think if the party is at a point where a person like Liz Cheney is getting pushed out because she won't support this lie that the
party line that the election was stolen.
Right. And it's like the main animator for the party, right? That the election was stolen from Trump, because Trump was so, you know, he was so dangerous for everybody else because he was just killing it in all these different ways, that they had to rig it. That's not what happened. What actually happened was Trump alienated so many people in the country that you had record voter turnout, and it was a complete revocation of who and what he was. And so we'll kind of go into how Republicans are dealing with that when we get to Florida and the voting bill that they just passed. But as it relates to Liz Cheney, you know, she's pushed back very aggressively against the idea that, you know, the election was stolen, and that there was massive voter fraud and all these various sort of narratives that are coming out of Trump and his camp. And she's paying a price for it. And Kevin McCarthy is like, look, the message is that the election was stolen. And if you can't get on board with the message, then you shouldn't have a role of leadership in this party. And I think she's trying to appeal to people like, look, once we go down this road where we completely let him take over the party and we're willing to say anything to remain in power or to take power, even if it's not verifiably not true, then I don't know how we recover from it. And once you do this, then you've pulled the trigger. I don't know if Liz Cheney will leave the Republican Party if she's booted from a leadership position. If you're a true Republican, right, like just old school conservative, it's got to be hard to sit there and say, I'm a Republican right now, knowing that this is what the Republican Party is, being dominated by a spineless Kevin McCarthy and a Marjorie Taylor Greene and Boebert out of Colorado.
And the ghost of Donald Trump.
Well, yeah, I mean, the ghost of, and, you know, Donald Trump really kind of dictating the direction of the party. And the issue is like, who do they put in her spot? And it can't be Marjorie Taylor Greene or Boebert because they're, you know, they're freshman congressmen. So the issue comes down to who do you replace? And I think it ends up being Stefanczyk. They want to replace her with a woman,
right?
For posterity reasons, right. I guess.
By the way, this is the party of all about. We don't care about that stuff. We shouldn't, right?
But I mean, I think they don't care, but they want to be able to use it, so they're going to replace her with a woman. I think it ends up being Stefanczyk, who I believe is out of New Jersey. Who was a very staunch Trump supporter, but she was somewhat quiet about it, but she was always there to chime in with snarky, you know, Trumpy rhetoric at you know, the opportune times. And so this is where I think you see her kind of slide into a leadership role where she's not completely over the top like Marjorie Taylor Greene or the freshman congresswoman out of Colorado. But she's Trumpy enough to where she will support the party line that the election was stolen, that we need all this voter, you know, fraud reform. And I think it's a really dangerous direction that the Republican Party is going down. You know, they're hurting themselves. But the issue is they can look at me and say, well, look, I mean, we were able to get record voter turnout for Trump. It just so happens that, you know, the people who didn't like him were able to get more of a record turnout. But we believe that that was through voter fraud, even though they know it's not. So what they're doing is they're going through and systematically trying to eliminate that difference in votership, right, by changing the laws, right, to make it harder for the people who voted against Trump to be able to vote, hoping that it helps to quell voter turnout in future elections so it kind of guarantees them their spot.
You know, I would love to know, if you asked 20 Republicans in a room of just Republicans, do you think the election was stolen? I would bet a substantial number would say yes. I think if you asked them alone and anonymously, I bet the number goes way down. Agreed. I think these people all know it's bullshit, but not all. I should say, I think a lot of them know it's bullshit. And then there's a substantial number of holdouts, and it's hard to put a percentage on. It's hard to do that poll, but it should be zero. The number of people who are still questioning whether or not the election was properly decided for Biden.
I mean, and I think that, so the issue is, like, look, I think anyone who believes that there's no, that there's a hundred, that you know, the voting is 100% legit, there's no fraud, no one's trying to illegally cast votes, like you're living in a world of that's not accurate, right? Like, I mean, every election, there is some. How much is there? Oh, I mean, we're talking about one in every million votes, right?
Like, right. Somebody pulls up, right?
I mean, the number is so low that it's we're multiple decimal points over in terms of its overall impact, or it's you know, minimal impact that it actually has. But it's out there, and oddly enough, a lot of the cases of voter fraud that we found to this point have been in favor of Donald Trump, meaning that you've got people, like there was just a guy who was busted for submitting votes for both his dead mother and his, I believe, his deceased wife or an aunt or something like that. But he ended up casting 3 mail-in ballots and then goes on to say, well, I did it because I believe that the Democrats are doing the same thing. But I realize now that that was false. So I didn't really, you know, I was under.
So he got caught.
He got caught, right. And so now he's blaming the false pretenses of believing the rhetoric of Trump and the Republican Party and blaming that on his decision to cast, you know, ballots that were for Trump that were illegal, which is interesting. That his defense is, well,
other people were doing it too.
Right.
That, like, didn't work when I was 7. I don't know about you.
Right. But somehow it works when you're a 50-year-old man. So, you know, I think as a country, we're in a fragile spot.
Oh, we absolutely are.
And it's, you know, people want to downplay it, but I mean, you've got an entire, you know, we've got a 2-party system. As much as we would love to have a 3 or a 5-party system with all these different voices, we've got a 2-party system. It's Democrats and Republicans. And right now the Republicans are saying we can't beat them, you know, other than lying, right? Just flat out lying and trying to manipulate through gerrymandering and impacting the way that people vote and hoping that that's enough to get us over the hump. And I think the going down this path really kind of sets Republicans and the GOP up for failure, because I think they're going to end up pushing out, right, or locking out people who would normally vote for them, right? Like, I mean, so we're going to jump to this Florida voting, but, like, what is it about Florida, right? Like, you've got older a lot of older people. They go down there to retire. They've had, you know, Florida is one of the states that has kind of got absentee balloting on, you know, they've got it down to a science. And they're really trying to crack down on the mail-in voting because, again, the issue really isn't fraud, right? When we're being honest about it, this is about limiting access of poor people and people of color and trying to keep them out of the voter polls, right? Or keep them away from the voter polling places. And so by putting in these laws that are making it harder to vote, making it harder to mail in ballot, making it harder to early register, making, you know, very specific rules that have, like, oh, well, if you miss this one detail, then you're not going to be able to vote, sort of thing. You're trying to eliminate that particular group of people. But in doing so, you're also going to, there's poor white people that vote Republican against their interests all the time, and you're going to make it harder for them. There's also older white Republicans that you're going to also make it harder for, who, you know, in light of coronavirus and the fact that you've got the same party that doesn't want people to vote saying we don't want to wear masks and we don't want to get vaccines, right? Like, that's going to drive your older population to say, listen, I'm not going to go and stand in line for hours in a place where all these people could be sick and I could get sick and it puts me at a higher risk of harm than it does the average person. I think what they're going to end up doing is hurting themselves, and I mean the Republicans, and they're going to impact their voter turnout, right? And they're barely winning or they're losing in a lot of these states. And I think your people of color and you know, your people of color are looking at this and saying, you know, this is the civil rights movement 2.0. So you're going to get a lot of black people, old, young, and everything in between, and people of color who are like, look, you fine. You're going to make it harder for me to vote? Fine. They're going to line up. They're going to sit out there for hours. Even if they don't have what, like, they'll load up backpacks. Like, I guarantee you that, you know, that a lot of these nonprofit organizations will say, all right, fine. We can't hand out water to you in line, but stop here at this particular place before you go to the polling station. Get a bag. It'll have a sandwich. It'll have a couple bottles of water in there and a vitamin pack or something like that so that you have everything you need to stay in line, because it's going to take longer because they have, the way they have sort of changed the laws, this is what it's going to be now, right? I mean, so, but you, I think you're still going to have people of color that are willing to withstand all this so that their voices are still heard. But if you're older, white retired person, you're just like, I'm not going through all that. I'm not going to stand in line with those people. I'm not doing all that. And I think they're going to hurt themselves.
Well, good. I mean, the idea that you would put into a law saying you can't give people things while they're in line, I can see how that could have some value. Like, you, if you said, if you come to vote for our guy, we're going to give you this prize. That's wrong. But people shouldn't need to be in a voting line long enough to require food.
Yes.
And I can tell you, in my many times voting in my life, typically voting in, you know, suburban areas, I've never been in line for more than 30 minutes that I can think of. That includes Bush Kerry. That include, well, when I voted in, I voted absentee before for Obama the second time around, and I did stand in a long line then because I was voting in downtown Cleveland. And that was early vote. That was, sorry, I didn't absentee vote. I early voted. And limiting early voting and limiting number of polling stations on election day in largely minority neighborhoods is blatant what they're doing.
It's obvious.
And yet,
yep.
I could guarantee you I could walk through any...
Well, and that goes to a broader point, right, about voter fraud. In a lot of these states, right, Florida, Texas, Georgia, where they're going through and they're putting through these voter laws where they say, oh, there was all this voter fraud and all these votes should have went to Trump. That's weird, because you had Republicans that damn near ran the table in every other part of the election, right? For every other seat, it was just that people were really turned, like Republican, your own party, were turned off by the guy you designated your leader, right? Like, so if all this voter fraud took place, how is it that the votes were changed for Trump, but they weren't changed for Democrats across the board? You mean to tell me that they had a system that was so specific that it could change just the presidential vote, but not the votes for you know, the other positions that were on the ballot? And that's the question that they can't answer. And they can't answer any of the questions when you ask it, when you break this out logically, how it could have happened. But I still think it shines kind of a light on the fact that, you know, you look at who's doing the designing of these laws and you look at how they got into power, right? And it completely contradicts the narrative of why these laws are being put into place.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, it's insane.
I want to throw one thing on to the point you just made. There were a lot of people I know who in 2016 voted for Trump because he was not Hillary Clinton. And they typically voted, or they voted third party because, like, I'm not voting for that asshole, but I'm not voting for that other asshole. I'll vote for Gary Johnson, whoever. I think those same people who voted third party but Republican in 2020 said, fuck it, I'm going Biden. I know personally a few people, and I don't ask people who they're voting for typically. I mean, well, typically I know. But I know a lot of people who said, I'm plugging my nose and voting for Biden because I can't take any more of this fucking guy.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there was a lot of that, and that's the part where, you know, Trump's ego won't allow him to believe that, right? Like, he's just like, I'm the most popular guy ever. There's no who doesn't like me, and anybody who doesn't like me is
a loser.
Is a loser. Here, pick a name that he wants to call people. It's obviously much more complicated than that, because I think the real issue is that the progressive sort of narrative, right, in terms of the progressive Democratic narrative is not appealing to a lot of people, right? It's just not. Now, you can get it, like, I mean,
what would you name as that? Because I think a lot of it is. I think, like,
universal healthcare. Okay. Yeah. It is, but it's not, right? There's a lot of, like, look, universal healthcare sounds great. I think it's great. I think we as a government are terrible at running shit, and I think it's a really bad idea. Why? Because I haven't seen any way that it's implemented in a way that makes fucking sense, right? Like, it sounds good in theory, and you can point to this country or that country.
Or Massachusetts.
Right. Okay, fine. Massachusetts is this fucking big, right?
All right.
It's this big in comparison. There's 50 other states, and when you're talking about the entire government taking over, and you're talking about entire industries being completely wiped out, and talking about people instantly not having jobs and everything else, there's a lot more to it than that. But that's not the point of this conversation. The point of the conversation is that a lot of the progressive agenda, and a lot of it revolves around not necessarily as much about the agenda, it's what they hang their hat on. The things that get progressives really, really... That will get them to turn on you when it comes to...
Okay,
to,
that's a different issue.
Well, right? I mean, but it gets bunched in with what your agenda is. But the issue is that, like, you can't... Like, if you use the wrong pronoun, that'll get you fucking slaughtered.
The ultra-wokeness thing is what you're really talking about.
Right, but I hate that term, right? But it's just the hypersensitivity to... You know, the use of this word and the use of... Like, I literally saw on Twitter a guy said, gentlemen... just so you know, pro tip, don't use the word female anymore when referring to women. The only acceptable term is women, right? Like, so you can't, right? Like, so you can't refer
to... And did he use the term gentleman?
Yes.
That's kind of funny.
Which is just like, do you realize how confused? Like, gentlemen, don't use the word female, right? Like, I mean, and it's just like, there are ways in which you, like, things can be used in an improper way.
Right.
But, I mean, we're really nitpicking about woman versus female, right? Like, I mean, it's just like, oh, well, that's just so derogatory. And if you can't see it, then you're a savage, right?
Right.
It's those sort of things. And it's just like, you know, the people that are just like, look, I want trans people to have whatever rights that they need, but I'm not 100% sure if I'm on board with biological men playing sports with women. And it's just, then you get attacked and eviscerated, things like that. And it's those stances, right, that where people really jump in and you know, your progressives attack people, like, who are on their side, right? But they will attack them and try to cancel them or whatever, because it's like, look, I don't agree with you on this particular aspect of this particular thing. And that is hard to swallow for some people, where it's just like, look, if you guys are the ones driving the left and driving Democrats, and I don't know if I want to be associated with you either, right? And that's the part where progressives get really, really upset. It's just they go to that sort of Sith Lord, all you're either with us or against us sort of thinking, where people say, you guys are fucking dangerous, right? Like, it's like, we can't even, I'm agreeing with you, but I disagree with you on this one little thing, so you're gonna throw everything else out that I have to say with the bathwater because I disagree with you with this one aspect. then that makes you really hard to tolerate. And then that's why a guy like Trump can get the sort of following he has.
And it makes people angry when you're like, what? And we'll talk about this more later, but it makes people angry when it's like, okay, I used the wrong pronoun. I called Caitlyn Jenner Bruce. Okay, she wants to be called Caitlyn. She wants to be called she. I am fine with all that. But if I fuck up and say Bruce, it's not a fucking hate crime. I'm not attacking a group of people.
I got attacked. This was not attacked. Well, no, I got attacked about, about probably 2 or 3 months ago. I pointed out that, you know, when Bruce Jenner, won the gold medal, right, he was a man.
Yes.
Right? Now, whatever was going on inside his head, how he felt, what he thought he was at the time, okay, that fine. No one knew that. Right? And it's just like, well, you know, like, so the point was, it's just like, look, he won those medals as a man. He looked like a man. He everything, I mean, like, all the anatomy lined up. He competed with men. Like, he was it, like, yeah. He was a woman.
I've never heard anyone say that he was a woman when he won.
Yeah, he's a woman now. He's a woman now. Okay. Right? And the same because he's saying that this has been something that has always been him and whatever. So it's like, oh, okay, but like I'm looking at the pictures, I see a man, right? And then that's where the whole sort of argument goes to something else beyond my basic understanding of science, I guess.
For I don't have a better term than ultra wokeness to describe what I'm trying to describe. I understand the frustration with it, but it is definitely what Democrats should not be hanging their hat on. They can't be trying to make sure that no one is ever possibly offended. And if they focused on policy issues like I was going to go down, they'd be way better off. Instead of the whole, I stand by, trans people's right to be called by whatever pronoun they want. I've backed that up with my actions in my personal life, and I'm not going to let someone claim I'm patting myself on the back, so I'm not going to go into detail, but I can back it up. If I fuck up, and I have, in front of people that I'm talking about, I've usually said, I'm sorry, and usually the response is, don't worry about it, and we move on. But you're probably right. If I were to do that in a public forum where I was recorded and I were to run for office,
that's the other thing, too. Like, one-on-one, it's fine. Right, but what happens is you get sort of a mob mentality where all of a sudden, like if you get a bunch of people in a room, like that's where they're not really much different than conservatives, where it's just like you said what and right, and then like all of a sudden you've got a whole different level of energy.
But now if you do that to Trump, if you call Trump by the wrong pronoun,
right?
It's both sides getting worse is what I'm kind of getting at.
Right, like, and you do have, like, so there's this extreme divergence, right, away from the middle across the board, right? And I guess in what I'm saying is that what Liz Cheney is trying to do is say, look, we need to get back to sort of this thing where we're focused on policy, where we're being reasonable. As a conservative, we believe in fiscal responsibility, and we believe in
family values.
Family values and all that other stuff. Like, everything that Trump kind of brought to the table to sort of like mix things up and is not effective governance, and so we need to kind of get back to
the values of our party.
So exactly. And so she's sort of being pushed out, and the question, I guess my question is, like, if they do push her out of a leadership role, then what does she do, right? Like, I mean, Liz Cheney, she's the daughter of Dick Cheney, is she forever a Republican, or does she say, I can't be associated with this anymore? Does she decide to then become an independent? Or I doubt she would move to Democrat, but does she just completely shed the Republican Party and the GOP after that?
And the answer I would say is, I doubt it. I mean, even if they say you don't get to play in the sandbox anymore, I'll bet she stands on her ground and says, I'm a Republican. This is what Republicans that I believe in do and believe. If you all want to go be Trumpies, go be Trumpies. I'm standing right here. And if they do strip her of her leadership roles because she's not... Well, first of all, she remains in Congress if she does that.
Yeah.
And I think she probably wins re-election if she does that. I don't think in Wyoming...
It's Wyoming.
Swing 10 votes and you...
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You don't have to swing many votes. They don't have a very dense population in terms of sheer numbers. Everything that I saw is that it was a heavy, heavy Trump-looking state. And so I think that she really is up for a fight to get reelected. And, you know, if she is stripped, I think it's a good chance she could possibly lose a re-election.
Well, I mean, obviously, I have to keep an eye on it. I like you said, I don't like Liz Cheney's policies at all. I respect this kind of, you know, and standing your ground thing.
Now, here's the deal. I got to be honest. How much do I pay attention to Liz Cheney's policies, right? Like, I know who she is. She's the daughter of a fucking former...
conservative vice president.
Right, conservative vice president. I mean, I know who her dad is, right? I mean, like, he's...
I can't stand her dad.
Right, I mean, I know
he's
her dad.
He's one of my least favorite people
ever
in politics.
And I don't know how much she falls in line with her father and in those sort of policies. I really don't. I don't pay that much attention to her. She doesn't represent me. You know, her name gets brought up because of one who her dad is, and then, you know, sort of her position in leadership. So I don't know a lot about her policies. I just know I've heard her speak before, and I'm just like, not a fan.
And she puppets the George Bush era Democrat or Republican Party.
So, you know, and then we talked about Florida in sort of their voting and how that kind of blends in, because DeSantis is very Trump-looking, right?
Right.
He's literally taking, like, he's Trump with a smaller megaphone, right? And he's doing the same thing. Like, you call him out on his bullshit, and he's like, oh, fake news, fake news. I mean, he literally will just sit there and repeat the word fake news, the word fake news over and over again, and then move on to another voter, another reporter or someone else asking a question. And, you know, Florida is passing this law. It's already been, I mean, it literally just got passed today. I think DeSantis just signed it today at some sort of GOP or something with Fox News. And it's already being challenged in court. It'll probably end up standing and holding. But what are they doing? They're eliminating and reducing drop boxes. They're changing the rules for mail-in voting. They're changing, you know, early voting and all those sort of things, and registration and absentee voting and how all of that sort of works, and really trying to isolate, again, the populations that they believe kind of push the election. And again, it's not about voter fraud as much as they say it is. It is literally just about changing who has access to voting.
Right. And if you watch MSNBC, they'll talk about exactly what we're talking about. And if you watch Fox News, it's illegals trying to vote with fake IDs or with no ID. And like, they make it sound like a stream of...
And there's really not many of those cases. And really on Fox, it's more of them just sort of touting how good of a job Florida's did, you know, like, you know what I mean? How much of a patriot that DeSantis is, and how great Florida is for doing this and taking control of the situation. So we'll never have another result where an election is stolen from a great president like Donald Trump again. Like, that's the direction that Fox News is going with all this.
Right, but they're also doing the whole, you should have an ID with you when you vote. And if you stop, people ask me all the, well, not all the, multiple people have said to me, how is voter ID law racist? Here's how it's racist. Here's how it allows for suppression of votes selectively. If every time someone wants to go to a poll, they have to produce an ID, have that ID approved by multiple people, a Republican and a Democrat, if in a place where they wanted to, they could say, oh, I see your ID, but I'm not convinced that's a valid ID. So I'm going to hold you up. And now this line that was going to take 25 minutes to get through.
So let me stop you. That's actually, because that's not accurate.
You don't have to present an ID when you... I had an ID to register to vote. I did not have to present one when I voted. Nor should I.
I actually don't have an issue with making people have an ID to vote. I don't. What I do have an issue with is people's access to be able to get an ID. That's the bigger issue, right? Like, it's not stopping people on the day of voting. The actual issue is people's access, right? And people, if you're lower income, if you've got a record... if you're older and black and from the South, you know how hard it is to try to get an ID.
I've heard.
If you were born in 1936 or 1945 and trying to get your Social Security card and get the required documents that you need to get a new ID. I mean, and a lot of people, well, how do you survive without an ID? Like, look, if you didn't go to school, right? If you haven't had a job, if you haven't had a certain type of job, or if all your jobs have been sort of under the table sort of gig, like, there's ways that people go. I mean, there are millions of people who don't have IDs right now, and you can be as critical of those people as you want, but there's an entire subculture where the idea of getting an ID is just a monumental task, right? Like, you go down south and there may not be a place where you can get your ID for miles, or it may be in another city, right? There's one place in the county where you can go and the hours are, you know, like noon to three, right? Like, and they do it intentionally because they know that at these certain times, it's going to be very hard for specific groups of people to get and obtain an ID, right? And it does, they do hurt themselves, Republicans, when they do this, because there are members of their own party, right? Poor white citizens who would love to vote Republican just because they would stick it to the black guy, but they can't get an ID because they can't afford it and they can't get there and they can't do it, or they live out in the boonies or whatever.
Well, and we've talked about this before on the show, but the location and availability of DMVs in the city we live in, right now, right where we are, with little effort, I can get to a DMV.
Yes.
I could do it on foot if I wanted to. I mean, it's not a super short walk.
Not
it's
today,
not far.
You couldn't.
Well, fine. I got a fucked up foot. But thanks for bringing that up.
But no, and that's my,
but
that
if
is
you live
always
in the city, though, it's a whole lot tougher. If you live in East Cleveland.
Because even East Cleveland, I'm telling you, Ohio is a different animal with this, right? And so people complain, like, so a lot of Republicans and a lot of my conservative friends who live in Ohio use Ohio as an example. They're like, oh, I can go get an ID wherever I want, blah, 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 blah. And you can, even on the east side.
Okay.
Even on the east side, like, I spent a lot of time working over on the east side, as you know. There are, where my office is, there's two places within 12 minutes of where my office is where you can go get an ID.
12, right? by vehicle or by foot?
12 minutes by vehicle.
Okay.
Right? Like,
okay.
The one is,
that's still reasonable, though. That's
right?
Fine.
But there's reason, and there's another one that's a little bit further out. But Ohio is a bad example, right? And so in Ohio, if Ohio says, all right, you got to have an ID to vote, right, then the only argument I would make is, all right, we got to make sure that the requirements to get that ID aren't so ridiculous that it's prohibitive, right? But, I mean, I think there are plenty of other places where access is the biggest issue, and they know it. So what they do is they're like, ooh, man, they got a DMV right there in Little Rock. Let's shut that bitch down. Go ahead and open up a new one, you know, 20 miles north that way, right? Or they, you know, they look at the population, they look at the density, they look at the demographics, and they intentionally move those places, or they close them down and they don't replace them, or they make the hours so ridiculous, right? Like, they don't open up until after 9 and they close at 3 or whatever it is. And so, and you're just like, well, what's wrong with that? It's just like, well, you have a job, right? Like, if you have a job and you don't work from home, right, where you can just say, oh, yeah, I'm busy working away, but you really have your computer set to not go into sleep mode, and you run up to the DMV for 15 minutes and pop back, then you're fine. But if you have a job, let's say you work at a fucking Burger King or a McDonald's, or you are a shift sort of job where you can't leave without taking time off, and taking time off is a big deal, like, then that's where, which a lot of lower-income people work, right, are in those situations where there's little to no flexibility with time off, and you don't get a lot of paid time off if you get it at all. It makes it really hard to go do things like, I mean, just your day-to-day shit that you have to do, it makes it hard, right? Even just going to a doctor's appointment, and now doing shit like going and getting an ID, it makes it even that much harder. And so those are the sort of things that are, that's why the requiring these voter IDs or requiring an ID is so difficult, because they make it hard to get them, hard to physically go to where you need to go to get them, or they make them cost prohibitive to where they're really expensive to get, or you need a combination of, you know, it costs $100, you need forms of proof of identification that are hard to get, you know, and then you put it all together, and it's just like, I don't have the time, energy, or money to do any of this. Fuck it, I'll be fine using, you know, this whatever thing that I put together to prove I am who I am, right?
And the only thing I was trying to say before, and there are ways around it, but there needs to be a mechanism to prevent creating a log jam at the places you want log jams. So if it's, I've got to put my ID down, someone looks at it and says, yes, that's your name next to your where you're signing to get your ballot, fine. But if there's the ability to say, oh, well, we need to check this. Oh, we're going to run your license for warrants. Oh, we're going to do this. That has happened in the past, and that is a problem.
I mean, some of that stuff you, like, by law, you can't do.
You shouldn't be able to do.
Right? Like, so you can't run a person's license for warrants.
Can you in Florida? I think you could. When I was living in Florida, I remember being very annoyed about something of that nature. Maybe I'm remembering wrong. It was a long time ago. But I remember that being a thing where it was like, if you were trying to go vote in Florida that year, and this would have been in the Clinton years, there were, well, we shut the roads down. There's only one access road to this. And we're going to do ID checks as you're coming in. You know, so maybe they were, fine. The law was you can't do what I just described. So they found a workaround.
Okay.
And that's the sort of thing I'm up in arms about.
Right. But I mean, I think, which is a little bit separate, right? I mean,
yeah, because like, you're right.
That's separate from needing
an ID to vote. You're right. Okay.
Needing an identification to vote.
Right.
Like, again, I'm not against requiring an identification to vote. What I'm, and so I'll give you that every day of the week. If you give me, let's make sure that we make it as cheap and easy and as possible for people to obtain a legal ID legally, right? Like this whole thing where people gotta go fucking find hospital records from where they were born and all this other shit, like that's absurd. It's ridiculous. People are too mobile now. So we have to come up with a more sort of like centralized, globalized way to prove who you are, right? So that you can get an ID that's recognized by the state. And then you can use it, like, if you want to, like, and then if you want to require an ID for whatever, I don't give a shit. Fine. Right? Just make sure that people have the ability to get this thing that you're saying that they have to have, right, to fulfill a right that they have.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you want to, when people say requiring an ID is racist, my pushback to that constantly, it's just the system that prevents people from getting the idea is the racist part, and that's the part that we have to fix, right? Because once you fix that, then why the fuck does it matter? Why do I care? It makes perfect sense, right? I mean, like, if you're here illegally from El Salvador, should you be allowed to vote? No, right? And so you need to be able to prove that you're from here, that you're going to have an impact. Like, right, and, like, screw El Salvador, right? Like, Vladimir Petenko be allowed to vote in our elections, right? Like, fuck no. You don't want some random Russian coming in and vote. Like, what do you mean? No. So, I mean, yeah, we need to have a way to prove that we are who we say we are and we're going into these situations. But what we need to do is go in that whole systematic racism thing. This is the sort of shit that's addressing, right? So we have to make sure that people have the access to get that thing that they need to do the thing that they have a right to do. Right, like, so let's get to the actual root cause, and then all of a sudden, these sort of issues over requiring a voter ID is racist. Well, that gets punted out the window.
All right, and I mean, you're right. My point was not apples to apples, but I still think it's a legitimate thing that needs to be fought against.
It could be right. I mean, like, it could, and I think once you, and I think looking to, if you go down the road, if you do what I say. Right, and we make it so that people can get the access that they need, then I think that becomes what you're describing becomes the last resort of, well, fuck, I mean, we're just going to say your ID's fake, and then hopefully we can get you thrown out, and we can slow things up. But, I mean, I think there's ways to battle even against that.
And the other side of it, though, is the voter ID law is also all about preventing mail-in voting. And mail-in voting, I believe everyone knows, in this election played a huge role. And largely in Biden's favor. So they're like, well, you need to go to a place and show an ID because if you put something in the mail, it can be fraudulent. It looks to me like everyone who did absentee balloting, including Ohio, did a pretty good job of making sure you couldn't defraud the system.
Yeah, I mean...
So you wouldn't be presenting an ID at the time of doing it, but you were getting a ballot sent to your home that you live in, and you are returning it with a signature.
Yes.
All right. I want to move on to, like, fun stuff. There's a story that came back up that I frankly had forgotten about, and that was the Navy SEAL who was accused of murdering an ISIS prisoner.
Yep. Right. So Eddie Gallagher was found not guilty by a jury of
a military, tribunal, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. A military tribunal oversaw by a Navy judge, and. You know, Trump got very involved in this and basically said, if he's found guilty, then I am probably going to pardon him, right? And so there was a lot. This was, you know, Fox News picks this up, and I mean every news outlet picked it up. And you know, if it was a conservative outlet like Fox or OAN, then Eddie Gallagher was, you know, being
an American hero who's being railroaded.
Exactly. And then if it was MSNBC or CNN, then he was a war criminal. Now, I couldn't really. There was nothing from the story as it was being reported on any site that I couldn't, like, the only way I could see this guy, no matter who was telling the story, was a war criminal.
Right. This was right. This was not the liberals right. You were complaining about earlier. This was the fucking military thing.
This guy, you know, they had an ISIS prisoner. He was wounded. And then this guy, Eddie Gallagher, sliced his throat, right? Like, slits his throat. And the guy bleeds out. And then, you know, he takes a picture with the guy.
I forgot about the picture.
Right. Fucking psycho. After he had killed him. And his own platoon members, right, this is a Navy SEAL, and his own platoon members testified against him.
Right.
Right? And so, I mean, when you listen to the description of how this went down, like, I don't know how anyone could listen to that and say, oh, yeah, it was totally legit, totally above board. Right? Like, the only thing he was found guilty of was taking the picture with the guy after the fact, which I think I think was like a four-month sentence, and maybe that even got shortened. But, I mean, a lot of it just seemed like, man, like there's no redeeming factor here, right? Like, if you're looking at it objective, it's like, it's hard for me to look at this and say, like, this is okay, right? I mean, and we've got rules of engagement. You've got, a military code of justice and a lot. And listen, the rules of engagement of when you can, you know, like, use a weapon and hurt a person, harm a person, kill a person in the military. The standard is a hell of a lot higher than what it is for a police officer here in the States, right? Like, the way, you know...
You mean lower?
The standard, like, no. The standard for our military is much higher than the standard for police officers, right? Like, in order, like if you kill someone in the military, like, you have to explain it from start to finish. There's a shit ton of paperwork. Like, you can't just go out. Like, I know people think Rambo just, like, everybody can just go out, shoot a bunch of people, you get a bunch of high fives and medals. No, like, you have to be able to go through, and there's action reports, there's explanation from start to finish, and you go through, and then it's just like, all right, these are all legit, right? Now, it's war, so a lot of it is verified, but listen, you get a bad kill, then anybody in the military will tell you it is nothing that you want to experience. So after listening to what happened in this particular situation, it's just like, man. And you got to understand what it takes to get to a court-martial of this magnitude in the military, considering who he was and the team that he was on and everything else. Like, the only way you get to this point is that if they have the evidence and they strongly believe that you're guilty, right? And it's not anywhere near as fair as what you get in, as it relates to due process and your various constitutional rights in a civilian setting, right? Like they don't, like, it's the military.
Not beyond a reasonable doubt.
No. I mean, it's just, you know, again, like, the standards are, it's a more rigorous process in terms of getting to that point of bringing charges and then having someone actually tried in a military tribunal in the United States military. But once you get there, like, the cards are stacked against you because they, like, for them to say, like, we're putting you up, which means we're probably going to find you guilty, right? Like, here's your chance to be, it's more or less, listen, throw whatever mitigating factors out there that you can, but, like, we have enough here to where this is probably not going to go your way. So for the fact that this actually went his way is amazing. But then the whole reason this is a story now is he, Eddie Gallagher, goes on a podcast and says, yeah, we totally intended to kill him. Right? We all agreed to torture him until he died. And then, you know, I slit his throat to get practice. And he said it on a podcast. His own words. Right? His own words. Eddie Gallagher's own words after the fact said, we intentionally tortured him and I meant to kill him. So my observation of what was going on, right, people can sit there and say, oh, well, you're anti-American, you're because Trump supported him. No, when you looked at the facts of this case, it was hard to look at it and say, they killed that guy.
Right.
Right? Like, I mean, now, when his, when, and look, his own platoon members come out and say, Yeah, he killed him. I don't know what the hell he was doing. He sliced his throat. We all said, dude, what the fuck? And now he's coming out on this podcast and saying, he's not saying that he didn't do it. What he's saying is that, yeah, those guys who testified against me, fuck that. They were all on board too. That's what right. he's saying. He's not denying right. it. He's not saying he was railroaded. He's saying they intentionally did it and they were all on board.
Which, do you happen to know what the podcast was? Because I'm...
Not off the top of my head. I have it in Slack. Right. I mean, I can right. I'll forward it to you so you can listen to it. But
that's I mean, so that crosses a different line, right? Of ratting out your, you know, he's going to say, well, they testified against me. Okay, fine. For you then to go out there and say, oh, they were in on it too. This, I don't know. There's so much ugly. There's so much ugly in the story.
No, I mean, now I can't tell you that I'm well rounded in military law, so. You know, double jeopardy and all that other shit. I guess, you know.
I would have to think it applies.
I don't know, and I don't want to speculate. There, but right? I mean, look, this guy comes out and flat out says, "Yeah, I intentionally killed him. I meant to kill him. Everybody else that was around me, we were all in on it." He's got to know. He's got a certain level of
culpability,
right, or lack thereof. So I mean, it's just like, all right, fine. But at least in the court of public opinion, it's like what this does, as sad and as sick as it is, at least it's just like, look, I told you the guy fucking meant to do it, right? Now, he may not have been found guilty, but, I mean, he's going to have to deal with that at some point with the universe or his God or whatever.
Okay. He's not going to deal with it in the justice system. I can pretty much
right. I mean,
he has no U.S. repercussions. It didn't happen in U.S. soil.
It didn't happen in U.S. soil. Like, right. Like, there are no repercussions for him. But I think it just goes to the broader point of, you know, this is another thing backed by Trump that any other, like anyone else looking at it, it like at minimum, Trump should have just said nothing.
Yeah,
right.
Because he's really good at that.
Right. I mean, but instead, he not only says something. He says, "Well, look, if they find him guilty, I'm going to pardon him." Right. Which a lot of people believe that influenced the way that trial actually played out, because they're like, "Well, what's the point of finding him guilty if he's just going to get a pardon?" You know, as soon as he walks. Right. So I mean, and to me, like that's the sort of thing where. You know, you've got to be careful with political figures making statements about criminal cases, whether they're happening in the military or civilian courts, for that exact reason, because you don't know the level of impact that it may or may not have. And yes, you have your right to an opinion, but you also have a responsibility holding that office with that platform not to unduly influence these various goings-ons. And yet he did it, and it's possible that... a murderer walked free because of it.
Okay, right. And I would say that actions like this becoming public knowledge are devastating to the reputation of the U.S. military, and they absolutely are. Now, this is not... I can't help but go back to the Iraq War and the whole putting Iraqis in naked pyramids and shit. Things like that are far worse. Not far worse for the guy who got killed. But those were things that... looked very much like they were done with the sanctioning of the U.S. military. And even though there were attempts made to single out a couple low-level people and take them down for it, it looked way too common. And that
I think it's all bad. I think it's all really bad. I think this was bad from the get-go. Because there's rules against this. There's rules about killing prisoners in this way. It's rules against torturing people. And when it gets out, I think it damages our... reputation, it damages our relationships with people, it damages, it's just all around damaging to the military. Now, I think the other issue is, look, we've been in Iraq and Afghanistan for so long that there's not much...
It'll take generations to salvage us.
Right. I mean, it's just like, and people are worried about, you know, I mean, we don't have it on the board, but I mean, you know, Biden's talking about pulling out of Afghanistan by the end of the year, I believe.
You said by September 11th.
So before the end of the year. And I think it's the move. You got to do it. You got to pull out. And people are like, well, what? Like, listen, we're beyond what if, right? The bottom line is we went into this country. We made a fucking mess. We haven't gotten it right. We're going to leave them in a bad situation. It's going to create a vacuum. The Taliban's going to try to take over the whole country. The biggest thing that we could do is anyone who helped us, any of our allies, we need to protect them and we need to get them out. right? We need to get whatever special visa they need. We anyone who was an interpreter, anyone who worked with our troops, we got to get those people out. We got to do right by them. And whatever happens in that country, I am sorry. We fucked up. We haven't gotten it right. It's going to hurt your country when we leave. We'll try to help you diplomatically. We understand that this is not going to go well, right? If you come for us, we will come for you tenfold, period, right? Like, if you do something on U.S. soil, or if you hurt one of our allies, we will come back and we will level this fucking place. Don't get it twisted, right? Innocence, whatever. We'll try to avoid it, but whatever happens, happens, right? So we're leaving. We're sorry. There's nothing that we could do, right? Even if we gave them fucking $20-50 billion, right? It's not going to make up for the damage we've caused, the lives that we've lost. And at some point, you got to be able to cut ties and say, I'm okay with it. It sucks. It's painful. It's terrible. What we've been there doing, there's no reason for it. The damage done to our soldiers, our military, our reputation, the lives that were lost, all of it is for a loss. We got to take this L. We got to eat it. And we got to get the fuck out of there.
Period. Not to mention the economic impact, which has been
I don't even care about money. Like, well, we just can't
bleeding out.
Right. But now it's just the human toll. Every soldier, the number of soldiers that have come back with PTSD, the soldiers that have killed themselves, the soldiers that have been blown up, the people that have been killed over there, the people that have been radicalized and have lost their innocence and now are just filled with hate for our country, for us, for our allies, for the West, because what we've done to their country, like, that toll to me, there's no dollar amount you could put on it. I don't care about losing money anymore. At the end of the day, we just have to put, there's got to be an end. It's just got to stop. I'm sorry, it's not going to be clean. You're not going to be, like, we're going to study it for decades and generations to come, and we fucked it up. We fucked up Vietnam, and we're fucking this up, but we got to go. Right, and because of guys like Eddie Gallagher is why this is so fucking bad. Right, it was already bad, and this guy makes it 10 times worse.
And I guess what can we accomplish? That's what we always do. This, we don't have an end game. We don't have a goal, a definable winning goal. Right, no one's going to surrender in Afghanistan.
I don't care what you tell. Like, there's nothing that you can tell me that you're going to accomplish this. Well, in 10 years, we'll be able to fuck you. We're done. Right. You're done. Get off the field. Turn in your uniform. You're done. You're not playing. You've been, not only have you been benched, you've been fired. Go. Right? I mean, I don't know what else to say. Right?
No, you make the very important point, though, that there are people that we cannot leave behind.
Cannot.
Because we've done that too fucking many times.
We do it all the time. And you can't, like, we've been there for so long. We cannot do it here. Those people will be dead. And that blood is on everybody's hands who has anything to say with it if we leave them there.
Right.
From Biden to DO, the director of whatever, like, whatever your position is in the military. Like, I don't, like, at this point, if you're a soldier and you feel that there's, like if your guy doesn't have a guarantee that they're coming back, you got to figure out a way to smuggle them back. Right? You can't leave those people over there. They will get fucking murdered. They will get slaughtered in droves, and it won't, like, most of them won't survive a fucking year.
And even if you're not doing it for the right reasons, do it for the wrong reasons. If you ever want to get trusted again,
right,
then you got to show that we fucked up and we're not going to leave those who work with us behind. All right, there's something I really want to talk to you about, because we talk about race issues all the time, and our dynamic is pretty well established. There was a story from around here, a guy whose name I forget, and I wish I did have it in front of me because I'd like to call the guy out. But he was in his apartment complex, and a 23-year-old black girl with a toddler in the car with her was driving for DoorDash. And she did something that bothered him. I parked in a way that annoyed him. I don't know exactly what. He follows her, screaming, ranting, calls her a black fucking nigger, piece of shit. He also had the sick burn where he said, I pay $1,000 to live here a month and you make $1,000 in 2 months. So, dude, get your rant game going before you do that shit. But then one of his neighbors comes out and says, stop it, stop calling her names, you're a racist. He replies, you're fucking right, I'm a racist. I've got an AK-47, I'll blow your motherfucking head off. He's now been charged with multiple crimes, based on threats and racial intimidation or ethnic intimidation. This guy exists way more than I wish he did. Let me throw to you, because I don't want to do the whole white guy talking over you thing.
Well, I mean, so this is caught on tape, and the funny thing about this is, you know, black people say, so this happened to me, this happened to me, this happened to me. And white people are easy to say, yeah, right, I'm sure it did. You probably misinterpreted it. You know what I mean? Like, and constantly, and this is why black people, a lot of times, we just don't even bring the shit up anymore. It's because it constantly gets swept under the rug, or we get ignored, or people talk over us, or they want to tell us what we experience, right? Like, you weren't there, but you're going to tell me that I didn't experience racism and that I'm misinterpreting it and that I'm being dramatic and that I have a narrative and blah, 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 right? Now, what happened was this woman just recorded it, right? Like, fuck right. This guy, right? And he says the racist things. He calls her a nigger. He calls her a dumb black bitch. He says she doesn't make enough money.
Calls himself a racist.
Calls him, like, oh, he's like, yeah, I'm a racist, and I'm proud of it, you know, and then threatens to kill her with the AK-47 that he had in his Toyota Corolla, right? Which
I found to be
great. Right? Like, so you've got an AK-47 in your Toyota? Why? You live in Stowe, Ohio, but okay, right, fine.
Whatever.
I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I guess you catch me at the wrong time, and I have small arsenal that I could technically have in my truck, but, I'm not going to refer to it that way. It's just... And I think it's important because she records it. And
right.
The issue that some of the racists are having now is that they go on these rants, they say these things, they do these things, and they're just getting caught because they're being recorded. Right.
And now there's a consequence.
Right. Like and now people are pissed about this sort of consequence. You don't want to get canceled. You don't want to get charged with menacing. You don't want to get charged with being an asshole, essentially. Then how about... Don't be that asshole, right? Like, if you want to be a racist dick, fine, be a racist dick. But when you start screaming out racial epithets and you start threatening people, well, whatever happens at that point, once you get caught on film, this is what I don't understand, people. Cameras are everywhere. They're everywhere. Every single person with a phone, right? Even if you got a dumb phone, even like, no matter what, you can't, but it's almost impossible to buy a phone without a video camera recording device on it, right? Mm-hmm. Not to mention the number of cameras, security cameras on private places, cameras by cities, villages, no matter how big or small, like the little village that I live in, there's cameras everywhere, right? Everywhere I go, I look, I see them in intersections, at corners, right? Like, there's cameras everywhere, right? So the idea that you think that you can just spout off and say and do whatever the fuck you want and think that there's not going to be a consequence, ooh, child. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's all I can say.
And, you know, yelling out racial slurs, not cool. Should that be criminal?
I'm going to say no. I mean, I think that there's arguments that could be made in certain situations where it could be. This, like, what he's was,
threatening violence, saying I'm going to blow your fucking head off.
Right. Once he says, I have a gun in my car and I am going to bring it out and blow your head off. Yes, like, yep. Now we're talking, you know, assault, yep. and other things. The using racial slurs, I think you got to be careful because you've got free speech issues, you've got all sorts of things. But there's arguments that could be made that in certain situations, like you're now trying to elicit a reaction, a violent reaction, right? You say it amongst a group of people, or you're literally trying to incite something, and I think you got to be careful. But I think, you know,
in and of itself,
in a vacuum, no. So it's not a crime to be a racist, but look, even if the guy doesn't threaten to shoot and kill this girl, right? Like he did, right? I mean, and he's like, I mean, and like, the, and the reason we're not playing a video for it is just that the guy is so vulgar, the news channel that we pulled it from, there's so many beeps, it would be terrible to listen to on a podcast. But you can find, we'll tweet it out, and you can go on our timeline and find it. But, you know, everything he said up to that point is not illegal, and he can say it and you can have that right. But the issue is, like, look, there may be a consequence, right? If you got a job and they get a hold of it and they see it, whatever, and you get fired, that's on you. You put yourself in that situation, guy.
Right. Freedom of speech, we said this a fucking thousand times. It's the freedom to not go to prison for what you say.
For criticism.
There are exceptions. Right. Right. However, it doesn't mean freedom of consequence for saying whatever you want. I think this guy is going to end up getting... I mean, he's going to get convicted or plead guilty because... Dude, you're on video.
I didn't say that.
Okay. Really? But back to what you started the show with, or very early on in the show. Then there's the ultra-woke crowd. And there was another incident that I saw... Not incident. There was another article I saw, and the headline was, "Is Jeopardy winner flashing white supremacy signs?"
Right.
And I literally thought, oh, fuck, I know what this is.
Like, how does that story get published? But anyway,
go ahead. It got picked up by Yahoo News.
I know.
All right, so guy wins on Jeopardy, and he wins his first game, and he taps himself on the chest with one finger because he won a game. Wins a second time, taps himself on the chest, two wins.
With two fingers.
Third time, three fingers. Now he's doing the OK symbol, which has been associated with the three percenters, and people are saying that's a symbol of white supremacy. It's also a symbol of, OK... I mean, right. Nicolas Cage says that to Sean Connery in The Rock.
Yes.
Go do this. Okay. Right. Nicolas Cage, not a white supremacist in that movie.
You know what's interesting? That signal, right? The OK, yep. Three, that's a black fraternity signal, right? There's black fraternities that use that signal. I think it's Phi Kappa Sigma or something okay. like that. But that's literally their hand sign, right? Like, and so.
I just know the cues.
So what's funny is that, I don't know. A few years back, when Trump first gets elected, and this became a big deal, right? There were black fraternity members who that's their hand sign, right? Colin Kaepernick got smoked for this because this is the fraternity that he's in. He throws it. Oh, see, it's because he's a racist. Like, no, right? But I mean, it wasn't. It was the progressive Democrat left saying that he's using these racist hand signals. Like, no, you dipshits.
Right. When you're trying so hard to find something, when the real shit is out there, we just talked about the real shit. Now we've got this, and now it's
and here's the problem. It's the you have to snuff out like because their argument is, right? The progressive left or whatever you want to call them. You got to sniff out racism in every corner and every nook and cranny, and you got to force it all out, right? And my argument, my pushback is, yeah, you can try it. But the reality is we know it's fucking embedded in the system, right? So you're not going to actually snuff it out. You'll never snuff it out because you can never actually snuff out what's in a man's heart, right? There are certain people who are just going to believe that black people are inferior. There are certain people who are just going to believe that people of color are X, Y, Z, and it's not good. Now, what we have to do is we have to dismantle the actual systems, right? We have to infiltrate and dismantle those systems and change how they work, right? You're never going to be able to change people's hearts. And you can, and if you want to get to that point where you have people thinking and treating each other as equals, right, then it needs to be reflected through the systems and the day-to-day actions and the way that we treat people as a whole, right? It's not going to be, oh, well, this guy did this hand gesture, or this guy said this thing, and he didn't use the right pronoun. So if we root that up, no. What that does is that creates additional enemies. You have to go and do the wholesale changes where you change how we view criminals and how we deal with criminal justice, how we're dealing with the criminal justice system, how we're dealing with the lack of opportunity, and how we're dealing with the lack of resources, and how we treat women, and how women are treated in the workplace, and how they are able to get access to certain things that they haven't been able to get access to in the past. That's how you change things on a broad spectrum, right? But this whole thing where every individual offense, you know, this whole idea of microaggressions and how it's all trauma, right? Mm-hmm. Every microaggression, it's all trauma and traumatic and everything else. It's just like, all right, you guys can go down that road if you want, but the problem is that you're creating enemies, right? And you're like, well, good, those people, we don't want those people. Okay, if you think that you can get through this, right, by alienating everybody, right? Like, you're going to learn a lesson like Trump learned, right? But the problem is that if you guys learn that lesson, then we've got an even bigger problem. So you guys need to kind of rethink your plan.
Well, and it becomes a little boy who cried wolf at some point, right? If every time anyone does, anytime someone does the OK symbol, you're like, burn them, they're racist. Then when someone is literally shouting at a 23-year-old girl saying, I'm going to blow your fucking head off. If you're putting both of those in the same bucket, I got no time for you.
Right.
None.
Can't.
None.
There's one thing we got to talk about. So Rudy Giuliani got raided. And I can't believe we missed that earlier and we didn't put it up higher. But Rudy Giuliani gets raided and he's got some issues, right? You know, they're looking at him you know, they haven't gone into detail about what the investigation is really fully about, right? We know it's his dealings with Ukraine and was he lobbying on behalf of foreign governments? Was he working for Donald Trump? Was he doing both? Did he report what he was doing for foreign governments? So Rudy's got some issues. He doesn't have any good defense for them. I think it's a little bit early right now. Rudy's definitely got some problems, and we called this many, many moons ago saying that he was gonna get pulled under the bus. Now, what you have to understand is a lot of this investigation, a lot of it started before Biden was elected.
Right.
A lot of this started, and Bill Barr was the attorney general. Right. Now, there were some political strings that were pulled that delayed it from really coming to light. But this investigation started, a good amount of time before the election. And Rudy's got some serious issues that he's going to be dealing with here soon. And it's just amazing to see where this guy has fallen from. Now, there are some New Yorkers who I know who say he's always been a clown. It's only a matter of time that this was coming. We're surprised it took this long. But for the most of, like, look, I wasn't close to Rudy Giuliani after, you know, in the 9/11 days. I didn't, you know, I wasn't close to New York. I didn't, you know him intimately as a political leader. And he was the mayor that, you know, kind of helped bring the city back from that horrible day on 9/11. And so to see where he was and to see where he's at now, it's just an amazing fall from grace. I honestly, you know, it's just like, I don't care. You know, like sometimes you see this and you feel bad for the person and you're just like, God, I hope it's not true. Or I wish there were a way out of this for this person. Or you're just hoping that you can, it works out the best way possible. But for Rudy, the way he's acted the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, fuck him.
Did you hear his defense when he was on Tucker Carlson?
Of course, you know I didn't.
The FBI came and they took these laptops. And I don't know why they felt the need to raid. I offered them to them. And then I gave them these hard drives and said, these belong to Hunter Biden. Do you want them? And they said no. That's right, Rudy, because they searched, they exercised a search warrant for specific things. They got what they want. Just, hey, let me hand you shit. It's not how the FBI works.
Which is crazy because he was a prosecutor, right?
I mean, was a huge problem. I mean,
and then he's got Alan Dershowitz, right? Who, I mean, my respect for Dershowitz has gone completely to the basement. You know, Alan Dershowitz saying, well, he is the lawyer of the former president of the United States, and they can't go in. Like, look, listen, there's an exception to the attorney-client privilege rule, right? And that is, if they have probable cause to believe that crimes or fraud are being committed, then they can absolutely, you know, that whole veil of attorney-client privilege goes away, right? If the attorney and the client, they believe, are committing crimes.
Michael Cohen went to jail. I didn't hear you talking over that there.
Right, exactly. I mean, like, Rudy didn't give a damn about attorney-client privilege. Then with Michael Cohen going to jail, he was rooting for it. So, and the same with Alan Dershowitz. So it's interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see where this goes and how it plays out. But, you know, I don't think Rudy will be in Vegas anytime soon.
Speaking of Vegas, I just got back from Vegas.
I know.
And
you see what I did there?
The segue there. Nice. At your suggestion, I decided to visit Planet 13, the largest cannabis dispensary in the world. It did not disappoint.
Did I oversell anything in terms of the way I described it?
No, you didn't oversell anything how you described it. I was bummed that I couldn't get a good angle to get a picture of myself in front of the Planet 13 sign out. Or not even a sign, it's a fucking planet. It's a three-dimensional thing. A, there was a bunch of all the people doing it, and they had someone to take their picture for them.
Right.
Call me paranoid in Vegas. I didn't feel like handing someone my camera.
Open so they could take a picture? Yeah.
Yeah. And they're gone. So call me untrusting, but it wasn't doing that shit. But no, you did not undersell it or oversell it. You especially did not oversell the security.
I told you, it's a fucking SWAT team.
Yeah, it was definitely. But it was well run. I visited another dispensary as well, and New Leaf also offered some stuff that I will be eager to try out. But yeah, it was a fun time, and that was definitely a worthwhile stop on my trip to Vegas.
And then where'd you stay?
I stayed at Bally's.
Okay.
And it was okay.
Yeah,
it was,
Bally's is my go-to because it's cheap. It's in the center. The location's
great.
You know, you've got access to, you know, some really nice casinos right there around you. And, you know, the way I usually have done Vegas in the past, you know, wherever I stay is literally a place to lay my head for 3 or 4 hours while I'm on, you know, a 72-hour bender.
Now, right.
Since I don't drink anymore, I'm not sure how that will play out in the future, but I'm going to find out here soon.
Well, I think it might involve Planet 13.
Maybe.
On that note, let's wrap it up, brother. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks for listening. We are done.